Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Racial abuse on social media has reared its disgusting and ugly head once more, with at least six Premier League footballers recently receiving hate messages online. What that continues to prove is that even in the midst of a global pandemic and an emotive summer of 2020, a small minority continue to harbour deep feelings of hatred, often racial hatred, but more worryingly, they still have a space to use that voice on social media, with a direct line to their victims. We have all had enough. This is a serious hate crime, and it's time for serious action, responsibility and punishment for all those who are allowing this to happen. Last week, our own Reshmin Chowdhury sat down to explore how we can move this issue forward with a stellar panel who all have experience of what online hate means. She was joined by the former Premier League defender, Anton Ferdinand, Dr. Daniel Kilvington, a senior lecturer in media and cultural studies who specialises in race, sport and the media, and Leanne Sanderson, the England international who has been targeted for her sexuality and the colour of her skin. And now we bring you their raw conversation. In full.
Is football losing the battle on social media and racism and abuse? Why is the situation getting worse? And what needs to be done to prevent online hate? So my guests, obviously, Anton, Leon and Dan. It's not something that's gone away. It's something we've been hearing about for, it feels like years, it feels like all the time. And every time you feel that there's an initiative, there's progress being made, we just seem to be going backwards. So I'm going to start with Dan, actually. And you know, when you look at what we've seen this week, it's not new. I just want to know, why do you think people do it in the first place? I mean, it's just the basic question, why on earth is it happening? Why do people feel that they can target people in the way that they do?
Yeah, I think there's a number of reasons as to why this is happening. I think, first of all, we throw in anonymity. And I think that if you can hide behind an anonymous profile, or that perceived anonymity that we have, I think that leads to a level of disinhibition where we behave slightly differently as well. And one thing that's always forgotten about as well is invisibility. We're not physically co-present with the person that we are abusing online. You don't see the hurt in their eyes. You don't see the anger. And because of that disembodied nature of it, we also, all the people who are out there doing this, don't feel that empathy as well. And empathy is a major part of, I guess, why we see racism. If you lack that empathy, you are psychologically more likely to abuse somebody, whether it's racism or sexism, whatever it might be. Another one would be about this rapid response nature of how social network, how it's built. So if we look at Twitter, that's a micro blogging website, and it's built on instantaneous communication. So the quicker that we respond with something, with our first thoughts or knee-jerk reactions, well, the more likely we are to post something we might actually later regret and not actually fully have thought out as well. And the final point as well is, if somebody shouts this in a stadium when it's safe to get back in a stadium, it's likely that they're going to be, let's hope, face a banning order or get arrested. There's people who can witness that and they'll face action. But if you do it online, there are weak penalties, and there always has been for this. And if people are likely to get away with it, it's likely to persist.
It's almost like it's because it happens online that it's not real. But obviously, it's something that will and can affect you as a person if you're a victim of that kind of abuse. And, I don't want to dredge up lots of old memories for, you know, Leanne and Anton. I know it hurts and it's raw, but I'm going to start with Anton first. You know, you have received persistent online racist abuse, and you know, you're a strong character, you're a professional footballer, but there's got to be a point where it does get to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does definitely get to you. And the reality of my experiences were when I was playing, and when you're in that bubble as a professional footballer, you have football that takes care of a lot of things that happen. So I've always been of the feeling of when something happens in my private life or anything happens, I've got football that will take care of it. Football will take away the pain. Football will take away any type of feeling that I've got that's going on in my personal life. And at the time of it happening, when what was this, nearly 10 years ago, I actually felt that I was okay. I felt that I was fine because I was in that bubble. But it wasn't until filming a documentary and hearing what people had to say who were around me around that time, like Neil Warnock telling me that I wasn't the same person, he could see it, you know. I didn't quite know until I started revisiting it 9 years later. That's when it started to hit me, like I was actually in a really, really bad place. And then I was able to put together and formulate and think about things that were happening to me around that time and how I wasn't dealing with it the way that I normally dealt with it, because football weren't taking care of it, because I never had a get out. Football normally was my get out, and when it wasn't, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to deal with it. And it was, like I said, it was only till later on in my life I understood and realised the implications that it had, not just on myself, but on my family.
Yeah, Leanne, I mean, you've obviously suffered abuse, you know, for your ethnicity, but also for your sexuality as well. Is your experience the same as Anton? Did it hit you at the time, or was it something that kind of revisits later on?
Yeah, I think, you know, hearing Anton, I want to piggyback off of something Anton was saying about, and I obviously watched the documentary and I really resonated with it, and it really affected me because I remember what myself and Ennio Reluco was going through, and it was horrible. And everybody to make you feel like, not everybody, but to make you feel like you weren't telling the truth, and you become the person that everybody thinks is lying and you're the one telling the truth, and then you get ostracized because of it. How can that be? And I still live with that every single day. And I was talking about it today when I was at the studio and I was saying, you know, that really affected me. But the difference is I felt like we were able to kind of put it to bed quite early, but it's still something I'll always live with for the rest of my life. But I don't think that by telling the truth, you should ever feel like you are in the wrong. And there was times, certainly during that time, and when I watched Anton's documentary, I really resonated with me. And at times it made me, brought back, it triggered me a lot, because I thought, you know what? I know exactly how you feel, because we went through that. To be made to feel like you're in the wrong for telling the truth, you should never be made to feel that way, ever. And it's not a good feeling.
Yeah, and it's interesting because as strong as you are, and, you know, as I mentioned to Anton, you guys are professional athletes. You have to have a different level of mentality to be able to perform. You've got to put a lot in your mind, sort of at the back of your mind, to be able to do your job as well. But, you know, it's impossible for it not to affect your mental state, because when someone is criticizing you for things that are natural to you, you can't be any different. You can't not be black. You can't not be heterosexual or homosexual. You cannot not be what you are or how you look. I just feel that is something that if you're not in a good place at a certain time, or for example, if it comes to you when you're very, very young, like players now, I mean, Anton, I don't know how old you were at the time when this sort of abuse had started, and whether you kind of see the difference in the way that you would handle it as a young person, or whether it wasn't as big at that time, as you say, 10 years ago, because social media has changed now, and that had sort of changed the parameters of everything.
It definitely wasn't the same in terms of the legs and the traction that it gets today. Definitely not. Social media was just starting around the time when it happened to me. Twitter was the craze at the time. I'm not sure, even sure if Instagram was about. It was just Twitter mainly. But what makes it escalate is the fact of what we're seeing now. We're seeing, and this is where I feel we're in a catch-22. We're in a critical position. Is we're talking it out. We're talking about it. But are the perpetrators, are the people doing the abusing, are they thriving off the fact that we're talking about it and they're getting airtime? You know, so it's a hard one. But you're definitely gonna deal with it differently as a younger player to an older player. You're definitely gonna deal with it differently. I can only go off of my own experiences. And at the time, I must have been about 26, 27, around that age. A young pup, youngish pup, so to speak. And it just became a ripple effect, if I'm honest. Like, one tweet, I think I remember tweeting something. Someone was tweeting me stuff, and I retweeted that tweet. and the engagement off of that one retweet that I had done, I was there for over an hour looking, reading through the engagement to this one retweet. And where the problem was, and I'm glad that things have moved forward and we're at a different stage now, is the fact that I was shut down. Like, I went to work that morning. I was on a training pitch and Neil Warnock ran onto the training pitch and said, "Anton, you got to go inside." And I was like, "No, I'm training, man. Get inside. You need to go and see the secretary." I went inside to see the secretary and I was told, if I don't delete the retweets, then there's a possibility of me getting fined. And that wasn't from the club, that was from the FA. And that was basically, to me, that was telling me to shut up, basically, you know? So now I can't vent. I can't retweet things and show people what's going on with me. I can't vent. Where does all that pent-up anger and dealing with how it's affected me, where does that go? It stays with me because I can't vent. I can't retweet something. I can't show people what's actually happening to me.
Mm. And it's a resentment, surely, that builds up because you aren't able to say how you feel, and it's the injustice of not being able to just be honest, as you were saying, Leanne. It's just telling the truth and calling people out.
Well, the thing is as well, I completely agree with what Anton said, because when you are playing and you're still playing, they don't want you to say anything. And it's the same as all the interviews are contrived, you know, stuff like that. It's kind of like the interviews almost become boring because they don't want the players to say anything. So I completely feel for him in that sense. But I think as well, with regards to the trolling, like for someone like myself, I always say, you know, I'm half black, I'm a woman and I'm gay. You know, it's almost like you almost tick all the wrong boxes, but all the right boxes in my eyes, you know, because it's not easy. But at the same time, you can't choose, you know, who you are, and you can't choose how you are. And I never would change how I am. But I don't think that when I'm on these shows, Talk Sport and different types of shows, I shouldn't go on my phone after and get absolutely hammered by people. And then everyone says, "Oh, you know, you're doing something right because they're talking about you." Well, no. And you could get, literally, you could get 100 tweets and you read four of them that are not very good. And you're like, and it doesn't, I've learned to not let it affect me. But if you're having a bad day, like, and stuff like that, it does affect you. It really does. And it affects my mum. I'm sure Anton can say, you know, the whole family, like, it affects them, doesn't it? And it's their mental health as well, because they love you and they want to protect you. And I can't ever comprehend. There's people that I don't like, and I'm sure there's people that don't like me. But why do you have to be mean? Why do you need to tell me that? Why do you need to go on your phone and say to somebody, "Do you know what? I don't like you." And it's obviously worse than that. But then when you do report it, you get a generic response back from, like, whatever company, Instagram, Twitter, saying, you know, it's not harmful or offensive because it's a generic response. They need to employ people there full time that see these things before it gets to the player, because it's like giving people your telephone number. Because after a game, we're all creatures of habit. Well, it's human nature. Players go on their phones. You do. Doesn't matter who you are. There might be a few that don't go on Instagram, but you do, and you check your phone, don't you, Anton? Straight after a game, I'm sure the players do. And it's not nice. You shouldn't have to go on there and it'd be all like nice things. You missed a chance. You got, they can say whatever they want, really, if I'm not playing football well. But why do you have to say to me, you know, about my sexuality, race, and being a woman? Why? Why do you need to do that?
It's when it gets personal, exactly. And Dan Kilpinton, I want to bring you back into this, because this is exactly where the debate is. But I feel it hasn't moved, because I feel like we always talk about the authorities. What should they be doing? I mean, look, we've had the Secretary for Digital, Culture and Media and Sport speak this week, Oliver Dowden, saying that there are plans this year to put in stricter penalties for the social media companies. That's something that the government are looking to do. Heavy fines, that's what they're suggesting. Why does it seem to be that people like Leanne, people like Anton and all the other people who receive this abuse, not just people in the public eye, just to point out, but anybody, why does it feel like you're hitting your head against a brick wall?
In terms of actions then, and what needs to be done to link it back to there, I think you mentioned the fine system and the sanctions. That's fundamental. And I think in the UK, we're on the verge of doing that, which is a breakthrough. We are behind the curve, though, because we look at, for example, Australia, France, Germany, they've had these big fines in place for social media giants who failed to take down hate speech in a timely manner, for example, and we're now about to do that. I think that, touching on what we mentioned before as well, that AI has to be better developed, and social media organizations such as Instagram are developing AI to detect hate speech and be more proactive rather than reactive. So things are happening. But again, we've waited a long time to get to this stage. I think that one of the key things that can happen is people like Ian Wright and Wilfried Zaha, Ryan Sessegnon, they've had direct messages direct into their inboxes on Instagram. It's too easy to have that direct communication. We've got to try and prevent that. We've got to have a different approach there.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
I was lucky enough to be privy to these conversations with the Secretary of State. I was actually on that round table, Zoom call. And previously before that, I was involved in a conversation where Kick It Out and all the footballing bodies, FA, the PFA, EFL, Premier League, were on a Zoom call with all the social media companies. I've been privy to these conversations over the last 2 months. And one thing that has come very, very apparent to me since doing the documentary and being involved in these conversations is people are happy to talk, but the minute you bring up the word accountability, that's when things start to go wrong, you know? So my thing is this, and this is my opinion, is until there's accountability, things ain't going to get better. Like, us as athletes, us as people in the public eye, us as pundits, if we're held accountable for the way we act on our social media, right? So if we tweet something bad or retweet something that we shouldn't do, we're, as a footballer, you're at risk of being fined and banned from playing football. As a pundit, you're at risk of getting the sack. But how come we're made, held accountable, but the people who are doing abusing and the people whose platforms are being used for the abusers, they ain't being held accountable? That for me doesn't add up. And it's all great having these conversations, and it's great, and I said this the other day, the conversations are great and it's good that we're having them, but I don't want to see the Secretary of State, the footballing bodies and these social media companies hiding behind the fact that we are actually having these conversations, because that's what's actually been happening. And this is the my problem with football as a whole. And I'm seeing this across the board now, is the fact that we like to talk about stuff that is happening. And what comes with that is accountability. And they don't want to be accountable for what's going on. That's why we suggest things and the suggestion gets thrown back at us. No, we can't do that. And why don't people like certified? You have to be certified to get a bank card. You have to be certified to get an actual tablet or a phone. Oh, we can't do that because it's about numbers. Numbers to a social media company is money. You know what I mean? So it all comes down to money. And if we look at it and we're being honest, it comes down to money. Why can't social media companies, I know you must have the tech and you've got the algorithms and stuff to go with it, where just on Twitter, if you go over 160 characters, you cannot physically press that tweet button. You can't physically do it. It's impossible. You've got the tech and the algorithms that can identify what context a tweet is being made into. So if they use the word black, they use anything to do with sexuality, you can tell what context that tweet's going to be in. Why is the context, you know, the context ain't right? You should never be able to actually send that tweet physically, just like you can't do if you use over 160 characters. Why can't things like that be put in place?
That's a great question. And I wrote a book on this 6 years ago now. So sport racism and social media. That's one of the things, exactly as you said, Anton, that's one of the things we actually said in the book, that there should be AI, artificial intelligence, that recognizes the context of that tweet and blocks it before going out, or you get a yellow and a red card, to use a sporting metaphor. I think that that's a great idea. I think that Twitter have tried to bring in something similar in recent years. I think Instagram are looking at something similar there. But again, these ideas have been around for quite a while, and we are waiting a very long time to see real change to stop this. If anything, it's getting worse. The numbers are increasing in terms of hate speech inside football and outside football online year after year. So you're exactly right. There has to be more action.
But the thing is, as well, though, Ben, if I post a song, for example, they'll be able to take that down for copyright reasons straight away. Similar to what Anton was saying about the characters in the tweet. So it's true. It's like lack of, like, not so they don't want to, but they need to do something about it because it isn't acceptable.
And that's what it comes down to. That is exactly what it comes down to. And this is my thing. This is what I was saying to them on these Zoom calls. We can have these conversations and the conversation is great, but what it really comes down to is, do you actually want to make change or not? Because if you do, you will. We can come forward and give you suggestions, but effectively, you're the ones who can implement them. We can't. And that's the fact. That is a fact. We can't implement these changes. We can endorse them. But I was saying to the social media companies, and I can't sit here for one and speak for the football players, because I don't have that position. I don't work for the PFA. But from my time in dressing rooms and the conversation that I was having in dressing rooms 2-3 years ago, they're still going to be the same conversations because nothing's changed in them 2-3 years. And the conversation was, I'm sick and tired of endorsing things that people have put in place for us, but what we're endorsing ain't really working. It's not something that's actually making change. So why don't you, as social media companies, go and find a solution to this problem, bring it to us, let's see it work, and then we'll endorse it.
It is. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, when you look at sort of the footballing communities, I mean, we know it's a societal issue, but it's magnified through football because it is the abuse that footballers are receiving because you're in the public eye. And that's how it sort of comes to the fore, really. This taking the knee is still continuing even now. So it's kind of proving in one way that maybe it's not having an impact because people are still doing it. Is that one train of thought, Leanne, I'm going to ask you actually, is that one train of thought, or is it that you have to continue doing that just to make that point, to prove that there is still a discussion to be had? Where do you stand on these sort of big initiatives that the footballing world or the sporting world in general put out there? Because you still see the abuse. It doesn't change anything.
Well, the thing is, it's a catch 22, because it's like, I think taking a knee is a powerful thing. And I think when you see everybody doing it, and when you see the black players, you see them closing their eyes, you can see they feel unified, right? But it's all very well kind of like taking a knee. We do need to see progression and stuff like that. And I just don't know what the answers are. We don't have all the answers, but we just know that this needs to stop and we need to continue the conversation. You know, do I know if this is something that's necessarily working? Or never know. But what you cannot change, you cannot change the ignorance of how people have been raised. That is not something you can do. So whatever's happening in your home, it doesn't matter if people are taking a knee or not. If you are racist, homophobic and prejudiced and sexist, you cannot change that. And you're not just going to switch that off at a football match. That is something that happens inside your own home. So we have to remember, it is a small minority as well. It doesn't mean everybody's racist, homophobic. There are people out there that are good people. But I do think that you cannot change ignorance. I mean, I've been at games before where people have said homophobic slurs that they don't even know are homophobic. They're hugging me after a goal saying homophobic slurs. And I'm like, you're next to me, you know, then I feel weird because I'm like, should I report this bloke? Because he's actually thinking we're cool. So it's a weird one. Do you understand what I mean? So it's one of those things that people need education. But you cannot change an ignorance inside your own home. If somebody is being raised that way, racism, you are not born racist. You are not born homophobic. It is something that is you are learnt. So therefore, those are things you can't change. But I do think that taking a knee, to me, I like seeing it. If we stop doing it now, then how are we going to measure if it's actually working? But again, you cannot change people's ways if they are racist and homophobic. You can't.
But why do people feel the need intrinsically from that ignorance, from that lack of empathy, from that lack of education? Why do people feel the need to go online, sit there with their tablets, sit there with their phones, and actually target someone specifically?
Very good question, actually. I think that we are in a place right now in terms of where we are in the world, which is increasingly divided. And I think that I would have liked to have seen the what came after the tragic murder of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter rippling throughout the world and the protests and speaking out against racial injustice. I would have liked that to have unified people, but problematically, it's actually divided society. And we see that with the banner flying across Burnley Turf Moor with White Lives Matter, people saying All Lives Matter. They're completely missing the point. What we also find on social media is because it's an echo chamber, because of what you like and because of who you follow, the algorithms tailor your content. So if you've been on there for 5 years, your Twitter content is reinforcing your ideologies and your ideologies are not being challenged. So we are going towards a world that is more polarized than ever before. The left wing and the right wing politically are becoming more distant. And we've seen leaders in powerful positions across the world in the last 5 years or so who are actually openly racist and xenophobic. And this is legitimizing people's viewpoints. And we'd like to have thought that these viewpoints and ideas were left behind long ago. And a lot of people say in a football context, in terms of overt racism, that's a problem in Eastern Europe, or that's a problem in Russia. Well, no, it's not gone away here. It's still here in the UK. And what social media has allowed us to do is it's provided a window into contemporary attitudes around things like discrimination. And it's shown that there is a very, very long way to go.
Do you know something I always think, Dan, with that? And I don't know if Leanne and Anton would agree with me. I think a lot of the time when online abusers sort of target someone, I think often it's just jealousy. They just look at someone doing well, they don't like it, so they pick something to target them with in the hope that they can hurt them. It's almost projecting their own insecurities onto someone in the public eye. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes. And I think that goes back to what Daniel was just saying about, I think the aftermath of George Floyd, I would say that it brought unity at first, because for the first time we're seeing people demonstrating as one, black, white, brown, everyone coming together. And that's the first time people have done that, realistically, when we're talking about race, everyone's coming together and speaking about it in the right way. Now, using the word jealousy, I would say it might be the wrong word, but the far right people are looking at it and going, why is there people that look like me marching with people that we shouldn't like? So instead of challenging their own kind, which they won't do, they're now going to the people that they've always hated and making it vocal again, and it's becoming what it used to be years ago. Is it a jealousy that the fact that black, brown people are now getting the support of people that look like them? It's like in the business world, they oppress ethnic minorities, but now I know people that are in the business sector who, after the demonstrations and the marches, they're doing talks and they're speaking about their day-to-day experiences, and all of a sudden the people at the top, the old white female or male, are actually checking themselves and they're going, am I like that? You know, so it's a powerful thing. But the reason why they are doing that is because they're looking at it and going, do you know what? There's people out on the street who look like me when I look in the mirror that are talking about racism the same way as a black or a brown person speaks about racism. So do you know what? I better start listening and I better start educating myself. And I think that's what we're getting, which is why we're seeing resistance from the far right people that are going, what is going on with the people that look like me? They're going against us. But instead of going against their own people, they're now going and attacking the people who they think the problem is, and that's us as ethnic minorities.
So, we've seen all these initiatives, we've seen what we thought was a sea change in attitudes. It feels, as Dan was saying, that we're actually more polarised post those big events of last summer. So where do we go from here? I mean, that's the big question. We've already said we need these social media companies to be accountable. It feels as though this is something that's going to happen soon in the United Kingdom. It hasn't happened yet. But one or two years' time, where do we want to be?
I want to be looking at boardrooms, senior management level, and seeing people that look like me. That's what I want to see. Because when I see people looking like me at senior management level and board level, when something happens, I know I've got someone fighting for me in the way that I would fight. So they are with an understanding, a personal understanding of how it's made, how I feel. We don't have that right now. And this is why there ain't no accountability when it comes to racism. It's because there's people that are making decisions who don't understand what it feels like to be racially abused. And I think that's a big problem. Until we start seeing people that who are making the decisions look like us, then I can't see the appropriate sanctions or punishments being handed out that will make people think, you know what, I can't really do that. So that's what I want to see. I want to see, and that's across all sectors. That ain't just sports. That's across all sectors. You know, and I'll give you an example, the NHS. The NHS, the people that work daily for the NHS, it's majority ethnic minorities, right, when you look at it. But when you look at the board, there might be one or two ethnic minorities on the board. That just don't add up. It's the same with DFA. From under-15s all the way up to senior team, the teams are diverse. Some teams, there's more ethnic minorities than there is white players in some of the age groups. But when you go to the board or you go to the senior management level, you don't see anyone who looks like us. So when something happens to one of the boys, or when the team goes out to Bulgaria and they get racially abused, they don't know how to they don't understand it, so they don't know how to deal with it. It's the same with Greg Clark's situation when he's been sacked for using the word coloured. If he had the right people around him, at senior management level and at boardroom level, because the way he spoke, it was like that was just the way he speaks. It was rolled off his tongue. It was the way he speaks, so he naturally speaks like that. But if, say, for instance, if I was in there, I would have pulled him up. You can't speak like that. You know you can't speak like that.
We were talking about that, Anton, before you came on, weren't we? I was saying that to you. He says this. It's the kind of thing he says, not saying everyday life, but no one's corrected him. How can you be of that age and no one's correcting you and saying, you know what, you can't say that? Because I'll correct people. Even if it's not affecting me, I'll happily stand up and say, you can't say that.
Exactly. And I think the biggest thing is, and I think the next fight that we are going to have is right now, there could potentially be a box ticking exercise where, okay, we're doing what you want us to do. We're employing people at management level, senior management level and board level. But the next thing is, are they going to be the right people? Are they going to be the people that are going to challenge in the right way? Are they going to be the people who's going to be accountable for making sure that we have got a voice? And that's the next battle that I think we're going to have, because I think they've got people in, they'll have people in there, but they'll already be of the ilk of the way that they want them to think. And they won't be the ones who can challenge them and go, oh, you know you can't speak like that, or you know you can't do that, or this is how that person's actually feeling. I think we need to have the right people in them positions.
Yeah, Leanne, 1 or 2 years' time, where do you think we will be?
Yeah, I hope. I mean, there's a lot of subconscious and unbiased racism that people have deep-rooted. And I just hope that conversations like this, you know, Anton touched upon it many, many times just there, where we have to see people in position of not power, but in boardrooms, coaching. In the women's game, the WSL right now, there is hardly any black players. Potentially, there's not really many mixed race players, and it's not good to see. And if you see people like yourself, then you want to aspire to be them. So I hope in a couple of years' time, we also will have come a time where people do have to, you know, prove who they are to be on these accounts. Because if we're still sitting here in 2 years' time and people are being abused online, doesn't matter if you're a footballer, actor, actress, whatever, you shouldn't have to stand for it. So I just hope having these educated conversations, I don't know all the answers. I'm not perfect, but what I try to be is better every single day. And we need to have people open-minded to learning. And that's just my I hope that we can all live in a world one day where everybody's just accepted. But that's just my hope and aspiration.
And finally, Dan, where do you think we'll be, and where do you want to be in 1 or 2 years' time on this debate?
I will go for where I'd like us to be in this answer. I think, first of all, looking at the UK government, I would like proper legislation to be in place and policies and laws. I would like sanctions for these social media giants if they have not removed this content or not been proactive. Looking at social media organisations themselves, develop that AI, include emojis in there as well, because they are used for racist expressions as well. They need to be proactive rather than reactive, which is what traditionally they have been. Ensure traceability and actually have direct channels of communication to law enforcement agencies, police officers. We also, what I'd like to see is better education, looking at our school curriculum, ways to decolonize it, but also hate speech and cyberbullying. This is what kids are going through right now. 25% of kids face cyberbullying online. These are things that we need to touch upon in our school curriculum, which we are not today. Other countries, Germany, Australia, Singapore, they're doing things like this. We're behind the curve. We need to work on that as well. And the final point in terms of a football context, I think one of the things that comes across in this discussion we've had so far is we need comprehensive and robust support services and mechanisms for players, former players who have been targeted and abused online. And that's currently not there.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.